Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. I didn't come up with a specific title tonight, but what I would like to talk about, I'd like to talk some about Buddha nature, something we've referred to over and over again in our practice. Buddha nature, fundamental principle of our practice. So I'd like to tell you, relate to you some of the feelings I have about the concept and how it enters into our everyday life. You know, more than just a metaphysical or theoretical concept, but something that's real for us as we live our life. Many of you probably have felt when you came to practice, it's likely that you felt a very strong pull towards this practice, towards a spiritual practice, a pull as strong as if you were being pulled along by a force of gravity that you could not get away from. And rather than being something troublesome, this strong pull, it means that what you are feeling or what you felt at the time was the most important point of your life. That strong pull meant or was telling you that you want to live your life according to your true nature. And this is the most authentic feeling that a creature can have, that a sentient being can have, to live our life authentically. And so we begin practice based on this attraction and this pull. And during our practice, during the months and years of our practice, you know, some doubts may arise because it is something new. We may feel some uncertainty. And we wonder what this feeling is. But when this feeling comes to us, we need to remind ourselves that we truly want to express ourselves according to our true nature instead of from the standpoint of our ordinary self, which is what we human beings do. Buddha's teachings tell us that before life starts, before the start of anything in life, all things are Buddha. Fundamental teaching is that inherently we are all Buddha. And as we continue to practice and continue to study the meaning of practice, we receive a warning from Buddha. Buddha tells us, or the most fundamental teaching in the practice is that when a desire arises, we could easily lose sight of Buddha nature and easily lose sight of who we are. And the teachings and our own experience tell us that we can obscure the sight of our Buddha nature because of our desires, because of our cravings and our attachments. And the more tenacious our attachments become, the more we can obscure our Buddha nature. And it seems to me, this is much like the windshields on our car. You know, it's very difficult to drive when the windshield becomes dirty. You know, we can move ahead, but it's difficult. And we're never quite sure of our view when we let our windshield become too dirty. Our vision becomes obscured, and we can't see things too clearly. It's like a soiled windshield, a dirty windshield, prevents us from having a clear vision of where we are going, even though we may think we do. So it's good practice to keep our windshield clean. And you know the good feeling you have after you clean off a dirty windshield. You have the feeling, now I can see much better. And this is what our practice does for us. We start to see things more clearly. So our windshield cannot do what it is designed to do if we let it become tainted or soiled, or in other words, when it loses its clarity. And it is the same with people. We cannot see where we are going or how we are going. And we cannot live according to our true nature when our vision becomes obscured by our attachments. This is the fundamental teaching. This is the fundamental truth of practice. So when we do not attach to ideas about ourselves, and we maintain, if we can maintain our inherent transparency, then we are Buddhas. On the other hand, when we attach to the things of this world, we are ordinary people. And the basis of all of our attachments is simply the attachment to ourself. When we are the Buddha, we are like the moon, expressing the moonlight. And it means that because we, as individuals, exist in this world, moonlight can have some meaning. If we did not exist, the idea of moonlight would have no meaning. And in the same way, because of our life, inherent Buddha nature can be expressed. Yet even though it is our ordinary self that enables Buddha nature to have meaning in this world, we have to be careful not to become proud of ourselves. We have to be careful not to become attached to ourself. When we are very young and very innocent, we are all Buddhas. But as we grow older, gain more experience, and become, you know, more sophisticated in our thinking, the mind becomes obscured with more and more facts and figures. And even our spiritual practice can become the basis for desire and can corrupt a pure mind. So if we come to think of Zen as something special that we do, and we think it can enable us to become something special that we want to be, this is a misunderstanding and will create problems for us. So we should not use practice as if it were something, you know, useful. Practice is not something useful that allows us to gain something for ourselves. And this is a warning we come across all the time in our readings and in the teachings. If we attach to practice as something special, which is an easy trap to fall in, especially when we first come to practice, we feel it is something unique and something special, and we're so overjoyed that we found it. But if we do attach to practice as something special, the mind will become like a dirty windshield. And even though we may think we are being quite pure in our practice, this is how we can become careless of our Buddha nature. And this is how we lose our original innocence. It happens when we become attached to personal ideas about ourselves. So to lose sight of our Buddha nature out of carelessness is a human problem. It's universal. It was true in Buddha's day and before Buddha's day, and it is true today. So when we practice, we should make a commitment and an effort to follow Suzuki Roshi's way and Dogen's way, and to keep beginner's mind, the mind of innocence, without judging and without ideas of gaining something or losing something in this life. Our original true nature remains unchanged. And this means we can trust it. And we can trust our own innocence and our own fundamental purity. But at the same time, we shouldn't attach any ideas to this concept, or we will corrupt our innocence and obscure the meaning of our life. So we talk about Buddha nature, as I'm talking about it tonight. We talk about Buddha nature and true nature, but there's no need to explain what it means. There's no need to analyze or philosophize about the meaning of Buddha nature or the meaning of what Zen is. In other words, we cannot study Zen the usual way we study topics in our everyday life. The best way to study Zen, as Dogen said, is to study ourself. In other words, to be very honest and very sincere with ourselves, and then be certain not to obscure what our study reveals. Our meditation practice, our Zazen practice, is about clarifying our awareness, which really means not to let the mind get caught or distracted by desires, to keep our consciousness on what we are doing and on what's going on in our life and in the world around us. Like Suzuki Roshi said, we should have what he called inward eyes. So fundamentally, Buddhism is not a philosophy. Buddhism is not concerned with metaphysical questions such as, how did the world begin? Is there a God? What happens when we die? Zen has some views about such things based on experience rather than based on analysis, and not based on beliefs that have been handed down to us. But at some point we have to say, I don't know. And just go ahead without knowing. If we remain philosophical or idealistic, there is no learning. So we should let go of too much conjecture, and we should just experience our life and the life around us with a wide open mind. To truly practice and to study Buddhism, we have to trust it. And we have to trust the teaching that tells us we have Buddha nature, or that we are Buddha nature. And we have to trust that we are not lost. Even though there are times in our life when we may become confused or angry or impatient or experience any of a number of painful emotions, we are never lost. We always have everything we need. And we should be watchful for the arising of our dualistic mind, the mind that judges good and bad and right and wrong and makes distinctions. Ideas of good and bad, in the long run, they do not help us. If we are always seeking something good, our mind will continue to wander. If we are always concerned about how do I make my life better? How do I achieve more? The mind can never stay focused. But in our practice is kept alive in our lives when we accept something or someone that may be known as bad. It does not help to judge something as bad, when the truth is, we say that because we really don't like it. Personally. But when our mind is open to the things that the world designates as bad, then our mind is really open. Then our mind is not judging our life based on personal desires. When we consider that our life is bad for ourselves, It's because we're seeking only what we know or what we consider good. Life has a negative feeling or a discouraging feeling when we are constantly trying to sniff out what we call wonderful or exciting for our own benefit. So the best thing for us to do is to practice and accept whatever comes to us without cursing or wishing for something better. This is not being passive or fatalistic, and we should always make an effort to improve our situation or the world situation whenever we can. But when we have the inner eyes that Suzuki Roshi spoke about, we can see what it is that we already have and how we can express the light of the moon or the sun with our life. So our practice truly is encouraging us . We accept what we have with a ready mind, without clutching for what we don't have. This is how we find understanding and peace in our life, and how we can understand who we truly are. Does anyone have a question? Yes.
Yeah. Hi, Les. Thank you so much for that talk. Very, very wonderful. I had a question. I probably didn't quite get it. You mentioned that a true nature, a Buddha nature, doesn't change. And I was wondering about that in the light of the fact that it seems like change is, where everything's always changing. And maybe I misunderstood you, I'm not sure.
It's a problem of terminology. Buddha nature is not a thing.
Okay.
That's where we get into trouble.
Okay.
Nature includes all things.
Yes.
Which are always changing.
Yes. Okay. I got it. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yes. Very good.
yes, Dave.
Yes. Thank you so much, Les, for your talk. We all know that we encounter various kinds of difficulties in our practice when our mind wanders and so forth. And it's important that we be somewhat gentle with ourselves and in fact not become attached to some idea that our practice will be smooth and perfect. You mentioned, I mean, these are sort of the minor annoyances that can come up in practice, but you mentioned the idea of becoming attached to the practice in a way that makes it itself become a source of suffering and delusion. And I remember Suzuki Roshi talking about this in one of the recordings. I don't think it made it into any of the transcripts in the books, but in one of the recordings, he talks about this kind of attachment to practice. And what he says is quite striking. He says, We call this selfish practice and we despise it.
Despise?
Despise it. And I remember being so struck by that because I think it's the only time I ever in any of the recordings heard Suzuki Roshi sound so adamant about anything. And isn't it true that if we do fall into this terrible trap of becoming attached to the success of our practice, that we still have to be gentle with ourselves and if we try to extract ourselves from this difficulty?
Yes, when we realize what's happening, that we are becoming attached to practice, that we come to believe that it is something special, and because we are practicing, it makes us something special. When we get a glimpse of that in ourselves, then we despise it. And we, you know, we tell ourselves, oh, I've got to stop doing that. That's a mistake. And then later we notice that we continue to fall into the trap. So yes, we despise it, but like he says, don't fall into the trap of despising. We shouldn't fall into the trap of despising ourselves because we have human tendencies. We simply have to practice so those tendencies don't become overwhelming. This, I think, is why most of us are here, because we don't want to be overwhelmed anymore. Good question, Dave. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I just wondered, is attachment just identifying with something as me? Is that what attachment is?
Well, it includes a kind of clutching. We identify the thing that we attach to as me. It becomes like a dimension of ourselves. And, you know, the danger then is we start to put it on display for other people. And that concept or that practice of putting ourselves on display is a big problem in today's political world. I think they call it the problem of identity crisis. Everybody, so many people are taking on a particular identity as a way to define themselves, rather than defining themselves by who they are fundamentally. So if we proudly proclaim that we are Zen students, we do ourselves a disservice. It's enough to say, I'm practicing. Thank you. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Les. Nice to see you and everybody else. You said when a desire arises, we lose sight of our Buddha nature. And I was wondering, how would you describe desire? Because it seems that desire are arising all the time in our daily life.
You mean, how does that happen?
No, how do you describe desire?
Oh, fight desire?
Describe how, what is desire? How do you, a definition of desire, what is desire exactly?
Oh, I think there may be a number of ways to answer your question, but the first thing that comes to mind is, I think desire is about having a feeling that I need to possess that to define myself, to enable me to be who I want to be or who I think I am. Desire is about not understanding that we already have everything. We don't have to make a collection of the things that come into our life every day. This doesn't mean we should turn away from everything. It means we should be engaged, but be ready to let go, be ready to share. Don't be proud of what we think we have obtained. Just if we do obtain something, let's use it for the benefit of others and not just for ourselves. I think desire is the lack of wanting to share. Desire is about wanting to keep something for ourselves, to enhance our own identity, our own, the vision that people have of each other. I saw, to speak about politics for just a moment, I saw a news item online today all about what's happening in Wyoming and with Liz Cheney, and the columnist said that so many of the people in Wyoming are wearing cowboy hats inside, where there's no need for a hat. But yet, as part of their identity, they feel they have to wear this hat, which identifies them as, you know, something that they all understand. Instead of just taking off the hat and being who they are, they use this hat, to use their hat to show that they're something. And that's just one example. I just saw that today, and I saw a picture of an auditorium filled with cowboy hats. And, you know, people do that without the visibility of a hat. People do that. People wear something that they feel that they're wearing and that they hope other people see so that they can be identified. It's a human dilemma, and it creates problems. Hi, Phil. Mute it. Mute.
Hi, Les. Thank you for your talk. I really like the notion that you said the best thing to do is when you're feeling you're in a situation that isn't very good, is to accept that situation and practice in it, and not do it without cursing, which is a good challenge sometimes for me. And I wondered, though, if that advice, it seems like maybe a monastic life is set up for that kind of practice where you don't have a lot of choices to make, but that it may be harder for us when we have a lot of choices, not to feel like maybe we've made the wrong choice and lapse into a maybe not literally cursing, but getting angry. I'm just thinking about what a challenge that is. And yet I really felt the power of what you were saying, that if you can do this, then you are know if you said reflecting the moon, or you are the moon, you are something really authentic. Any thoughts about the part of our lives that are so where we have so many choices, so much choice, and sometimes feel pressured to make the right choice, of keeping this attitude of practicing in the midst of difficulty without trying to escape it?
That's an important point, Phil. Practicing, today we are practicing mostly as lay people in the everyday world. And we've chosen to continue the responsibilities of an everyday life. Work, family, and living in the uncertainties and everyday changing world, unlike living like monks in a monastery where life is restricted, and if you vary from the restrictions of the life, somebody will come around and shape you up and bring you back. There will be discipline. But in our world, in the Western Zen world, we don't have that kind of externally imposed discipline on us. We do have a lot of choices, like you say. And this makes practicing quite a bit more challenging for us. I think the fundamental question is, or the fundamental effort we must make is, we need to consider, what is our responsibility? We know we have responsibilities to family and friends and other people, and we take them seriously. But from a spiritual standpoint, is that our fundamental responsibility? When we remind ourselves what is the high priority, what is our fundamental responsibility, everything else starts to sort out. And the responsibilities for ordinary life start to fall into place without conflict. So it's a matter of wanting to live life authentically and doing our best to understand what is our primary responsibility if we want to live that way. This is our practice. Thank you for the question, Phil.
Thank you for your response.
Josh has a question.
Oh, Josh. Hey, Josh.
Hello. Thank you so much for today's lesson. I think a common theme that's been throughout this talk was about, being careful about not becoming too attached to our practice. And I feel like that could be a tricky thing. You know, I think sometimes I find myself, whenever this topic comes up in everyday life, I can think, I don't think I'm that attached. I'm good, but that can be misleading, right? And, you have a lot of experience, and you've taught many people, given many Dharma talks and such. And I'm wondering if you had any personal examples or anecdotes about seeing someone who thinks that they're not attached to practice, but they actually are.
Oh. Well, I don't recall anybody being too brazen about it. Walking around being very proud, but it happens. It can happen very subtly. If we go to morning zazen with the best of intentions, and on the drive home, we say to ourselves, I went to morning zazen. That sort of diminishes the practice. When we drive home after morning zazen, we simply say, what's next? That's the best way. Life is not troublesome when we have that attitude. What's next? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm happy to see all of you tonight. We have been deprived of the pleasure of being with each other in person for too long now. But at least we have this technology that lets us share ourselves virtually. I'm hoping we can open up Kanando more freely in the coming weeks or months.
This talk was brought to you by the Kanando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to kanando.org. That's kanndo.org.